This is the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. A look inside the sweet science with Chris Mannix.
I will be always remembered as a winner.
Interviews.
Fran Freddie Roach, Hall of Fame trainer.
Analysis.
That is the thing Floyd's talking about right now.
And everything going on in the world of boxing.
I would have liked him to get to the bell to see what was what.
Post a rating or leave a comment on iTunes.
He smells bad.
About the podcast.
Oh.
And now a man who several people would like to punch in the face repeatedly. Chris Mannix.
All right, thanks for joining me this week on the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast, and got a terrific show for you. Huge show for you today. We begin with Lance Pugmire, the boxing writer over at the LA Times. Lance joins me in studio, and we go through all the news in boxing, from the DAZN rollout to Manny Pacquiao's fight to the upcoming fight between Danny Garcia and Sean Porter. All that and much more with Lance Pugmire of the LA Times. A little bit later on, I sit down with Mikey Garcia, one of the top five pound-for-pound fighters in the world, in my opinion. He's got a fight this upcoming Saturday. He faces Robert Easter, lightweight unification fight. Great fight. I talked to Mikey about that event. Plus, looking ahead a little bit, why does he continue to chase down Errol Spence Jr., and why is he not more interested in a major lightweight showdown with Vasyl Lomachenko? So all that and more coming up. Stick around for the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. Joining me first on the podcast, you can read his stuff in the LA Times. Terrific boxing writer, terrific MMA writer. Follow him on Twitter, at LA Times Pugmire. He is Lance Pugmire. What's up, man?
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
I'm glad to be here. We're in Los Angeles. I had to do a podcast with you while I'm out
for
here
sure.
in LA.
Thank you.
Everything good, man? Everything?
Oh, real good. Yeah, outstanding. Busy fight week as usual. So.
Yeah, we'll get to the fight week. Mikey Garcia fighting this weekend, trying to pick up another piece of the 135-pound crown, and a lot on the line for the future of Mikey Garcia as well. But I want to start this week, Lance, talking about the announcement from last week from DAZN, the streaming service which partnered with Eddie Hearn's Matchroom Boxing on a deal which could be worth more than $1 billion. They had their big rollout last week. Hearn introduced a slew of fighters and announced the first boxing match on DAZN, the heavyweight title fight between Anthony Joshua and Alexander Povetkin, which will take place on September 22nd. Lance, we have HBO, we have Showtime, we have ESPN. How do you see DAZN fitting into this mix?
You know, I think to start this, I would say that, you know, for the people who say boxing is dying, you've got $1 billion potentially coming in. Obviously, there's a long way to go. We know from all the people that I'm talking to, this is at least an 18-month investment, and they're going to check how things are going at that point. I would say that, look, if this produces more quality fights, then I'm all for it. But if it's going to be a situation where now Eddie Hearn and DAZN are creating their own fiefdom, and we've already got the Showtime Al Haymon fiefdom, and now we've got the ESPN Bob Arum fiefdom, and they're all separated and they're not working with each other, then I don't really see how it moves the needle. My hope for DAZN is that Eddie Hearn, who we all know is a very smart guy, mm-hmm. and has Anthony Joshua and some other good fighters. My hope is that this guy will, you know, move across the street, so to speak, and be able to participate with the other promoters and make the fights that we all want to see.
How do you think that, and look, I agree with you because that's the only way to make significant fights in 2019 and beyond. I think 2018, everybody's okay with their individual stables. There's enough talent in each one. When you get to 2019, it starts begging for, you know, mixing and matching of promoters and networks. But network executives would tell you that they like to have, you know, they like to have Golovkin HBO guy, Canelo HBO guy, Garcia, Porter, Showtime guys. Anthony Joshua, will DAZN want Anthony Joshua to be a DAZN guy? Will he want the guys Eddie Hearn signed to be DAZN guys? How do you think networks will react to that?
I mean, it's going to be a tough thing. Obviously, I think they're already having their guard up. You know, there's a lot of talk right now about like, oh, you know, Eddie Hearn or at least his people are out there trying to quote unquote steal our fighters and really round up his own stable. You know, yes, it. Let's be honest. It works as a business model for these guys to have their own fighters. We've got a big fight in September, like you said, with Gennady and Canelo on HBO. But, you know, I think for the sake of the sport, let's give the fight audience, the fan, the fights that we all want to see. So I think that, I don't know, it just seems to me that you're right. Like right now, Eddie Hearn is deserved the opportunity to build up his stable and put whatever fights he can find right now and put them on. Let's be honest. I mean, will Billy Joe Saunders and Demetrius Andrade be a great fight? Maybe not, but it's interesting enough. And I
meaningful
think
fight for the real boxing.
It is.
Community.
You know, yeah. So I mean, Demetrius is a talent. Billy Joe Saunders obviously gave a great account of himself in destroying Lemieux, and I think that, you know, he's starting in the right place. But is Jesse Vargas a true A side? When probably Jesse Vargas, on the heels of what he did in his last fight, should probably be in position maybe to fight the winner of Porter and Garcia, you know? Mm-hmm. So instead of that, he's going to be an A-side on a fight that I don't know how many people want to see it. So from that standpoint, it's really kind of like watch and see territory.
You know, the headline of this deal is the $1 billion price tag. Everybody uses that at the front of stories. But you're right. This is a much more shorter-term investment, kind of see what it looks like 18 months to 2 years from now. What do you think success looks like? Because this is an app that's still unavailable in the United States. They're going to drop it sometime, I believe, next month when they start doing the Bellator stuff. And then people, it'll have to build up an audience gradually. But what do you think how do they measure success on a subscription service like this?
I think only they know what numbers justify a success. I mean, we don't know those numbers right now, and they can tell us, but will we believe them? I think only they know. I mean, they've got John Skipper, the former head of ESPN, so he has a good feel for what it's going to be. But I was having this conversation actually driving in here today with someone about at least the ESPN Plus app. They have the connection to the worldwide sports leader and all these different platforms of actual television. DAZN is just DAZN, a streaming service. So what does qualify as a success? I mean, it's something that, you know, I think they did a very smart thing in saying that we're going to start with Anthony Joshua. I think that, you know, Anthony Joshua is definitely a fighter who's going to move the needle in this country. I mean, people want to see that fight against Deontay Wilder that's being built up. So it's a great place to start. Hopefully, for the sake of the sport, there will be a lot of interest in the streaming device. But the thing is that there's so many of these things. I mean, just last week we had this fight with Usyk and Gassiev come up on the streaming service called Cloud. Mm-hmm. You know, people were asked to pay about, I think, $10 for that. And now we're being asked to pay $10 for DAZN, and we're being asked to pay $5 for the ESPN Plus app, in addition to all the pay-per-view things. So, like, how much is overkill? And you know, will the fight audience be there to really support this venture?
One thing I think DAZN has working for it early is that I've seen its app. It's the international version of it. It's very functional, whereas ESPN Plus, they're still working out some things there. They just, they kind of planted that flag out there. They wanted to put boxing on there, and the boxing events have been really good that have been on there. But the functionality of the app still needs some work, whereas DAZN, it's a little bit more functional. My question is going to be, will they put shoulder programming on there? Will they do 24/7 type broadcast program, whatever you want to call it, for major events? Or do they just want to be kind of this Netflix of sports where you've got a fight, this is where the fight's is available, click on it, you get the fight, and nothing else? I mean, that I think is an interesting question.
Well, and I think what they've said is, I think that's a good idea. I think that that's a necessary thing to do. What they've said is, look, where we're starting, when we're starting right now, these other sports that we want to get involved in, baseball, football, basketball, are not really available. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with boxing, and then we're going to cross those bridges when they're available to us. So obviously this thing has the potential to really take off. You know, I talked to Anthony Joshua about it, and he looked at it like you did. And he said, look, you know, seeing their vision and knowing who these guys are, like we said, and John Skipper, I believe in them. And I believe in their vision, and I think that they're going to accomplish what they're setting out to do. But right now, it's a very uphill battle.
Yeah, no question. And you talked about the money that boxing fans have to dish out to get good boxing every single week. I think the price point was better than what I expected it to be, about $10 per month. I mean, there was some projections of $15, $20, whatever. But ultimately, it's going to come down. I think boxing fans will pay for good fights, just like with anything else. I mean, you put Terrence Crawford against Jeff Horn on ESPN+, boxing fans will pay for it. You put Manny Pacquiao against Lucas Matisse on ESPN+, boxing fans will pay for it. I think the core boxing fans are going to sign up for Anthony Joshua versus Alexander Povetkin, no question. But can they keep that momentum going? Can you keep these good fights going? Because if you can, you're going to have a winner. It's as simple as that. It's not about, you know, flash and A-list fighters. It's A-list versus A-list. It's A-list versus B-list. It can't be, and I think the PBC, we learned this about them, even though it was free, it failed because it was a lot, in part, because it was a lot of A-list versus D-list fighters.
Right, right. And I think with Eddie Hearn, this magnetic personality kind of really leading the charge and trying to round up the talent, it deserves, it deserves our attention, and let's see where it goes from here.
One thing I like about what Eddie's doing is that he's going after fighters, and he's going after the fighters that don't have promotional contracts mostly, and those are all the Al Haymon fighters basically. Mm-hmm. But as we saw early on, he's partnering with some promoters. He's co-promoting some guys. So I think if he continues to do that, look, these promoters, especially the smaller ones, they're going to want the money. Like, if a guy can't get a fight on HBO or Showtime and DAZN's out there offering him $2 million, I mean, promoters aren't idiots. I mean, fighters, they're not idiots either. I mean, they're eventually going to gravitate towards if the deal is right.
Yeah, and I think that it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. Like I said, as we started this conversation with, when you've got all this money coming into boxing, let's see where it goes. It can only be a positive at this point, and let's see if another smart mind can help solve this puzzle of how to maximize the interest in boxing.
Yeah, I just I'm with you on playing nice in 2019. That should be like the motto of 2019. Everybody play nice, mix and match, guys. I mean, Bob Arum's talked about his willingness to do trades, with boxers. I mean, let's put our money where our mouth is.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where everyone's coming from. It's like, you're saying all the right things, but it's just like, we'll get into Mikey Garcia, but it's like, let's see, you fulfill what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, let's move on to Mikey Garcia. Moving back down to 135 pounds, he'll defend his title there against Robert Easter. Pretty heavily favored in a fight like this. Easter's a good fighter, but didn't look great in his last time out, whereas Garcia moved up to 140, won a title there, has been a dominant fighter in that 130-135-pound range. Garcia Easter, what are you expecting from that one?
I think for Mikey Garcia, it's, I applaud him for taking on this challenge. He's taken on a pretty problematic fighter, with a significant height and reach advantage on him. And I think for Mikey, he is, and he says he's all about challenging himself and now taking this unification fight. And I think probably the most important thing about this fight to Mikey is that it's in Los Angeles. He's really wanted to fight back home in Los Angeles. He hasn't been here, and I think in about 7 years, mm-hmm. on an undercard fight. And he really wants to, sort of flex his muscle. I'm a four-division world champion. It's a homecoming fight, and it's basically a celebration. I think against Easter, yes, I think Mikey's like 6-9 to one favorite here. He's obviously has the power to take this guy out, and I think, just envisioning Mikey attacking this guy's body, how long can Easter hang in there? But Easter is coming at it from the right standpoint. He said he was feeling a little bit distracted in his hometown of Toledo, Ohio. So he got out of there, went to Florida with accompanied by his trainer and his father, Robert Easter Sr., went down and worked with Devin Alexander's trainer, Kevin Cunningham, and really had great things to say about the 10-week camp that he had with Kevin. Said that he was completely focused, conditioned as well as he could, and feels, entirely prepared for this fight that's coming on Saturday. So, I think it's our tendency as not only boxing writers but boxing fans to look at someone's most recent body of work. And Easter, like you said, had kind of a complicated time with an overweight Javier Fortuna. But I think that Easter understands this test that is coming with Mikey Garcia and is ready for it. And I think that, if he can keep him at bay with those advantages, those physical advantages that he has, we could be in for a pretty enjoyable night of boxing.
Yeah, I like that Easter made the trainer change. I do think we're looking at two fighters in different classes, though. I think Mikey Garcia is a pound-for-pound type of guy. I mean, you can make a real argument that Mikey Garcia is top 2 or 3 pound-for-pound. I mean, he is that skilled, not technically proficient. I think he gets on the inside. I think he dispatches Easter, maybe not easily, but I think in short order. But the bigger question with Mikey Garcia, and what comes up a lot, and I know you've written about it, is after this fight. And, you know, if he picks up this piece of the lightweight title, he'll have two of them. At some point, it looks like Vasily Lomachenko, you know, barring a massive upset, will probably have the other two of those titles. You know, Beltran's got one, but he's kind of earmarked for a Lomachenko fight in the fall or the early winter. That sets up a natural showdown between Mikey Garcia and Vasily Lomachenko. But that doesn't seem to be at all on the mind of Mikey Garcia right now. Every time I read an interview with Mikey Garcia, he talks about moving up to 147 pounds and taking on Errol Spence. Now, I love the attitude. I love the I want to take on all comers. But to me, Mikey Garcia moving up to 147 pounds puts a showdown with Lomachenko at risk. Because yeah. I don't even know if he comes back down after that. How many times have we seen fighters go up 2 weight classes and then come back down for another fight? And if they do, they're not the same type of fighter. What do you make of Garcia's, I don't even know what words to use. Like, I mean, he's hell-bent on going right after Errol Spence.
Well, I think it's all connected to the 2-year contract dispute that he had with Top Rank and Bob Arum and Todd DeBuff. I mean, obviously there are some very serious, bitter feelings between those parties. Mm-hmm. And I think while we all know that Garcia Lomachenko is obviously the best fight that can be made. If you're talking about something that could be made in Cinco de Mayo 2019, can you imagine?
Two top 5 pound-for-pound fighters.
It's a perfect a perfect time. It's a perfect collision course for these guys. They're both looking unbelievable. And I think that's what's really at play. I think Mikey has kind of said those things. Like, look, I'm interested in the fights that I know can happen. And he's not convinced that he can effectively do business with Arum and Todd DeBuff and get a Lomachenko fight. Is it because he believes that Arum and DeBuff are trying to protect Lomachenko and they don't want him to take a loss, another loss right now? I don't know. But I think that Mikey Garcia is saying, okay, I'm 30 years old now. This is what I want out of my career. Out of all the fights that are possible, the one that can get me to pay-per-view next is a showdown, even though I'm testing myself and probably going to lose the fight. He thinks he can win, obviously. Mm. But even though I could possibly lose, getting me to pay-per-view in a super fight against welterweight champion Errol Spence is my best path forward at this point, just to be completely realistic about it. And that's what I see is coming from Mikey. I think that, you know, I gave him a hard time, and he knows this. When he fought Sergey Lipinets for the 140-pound title, yes, he added a fourth division belt, but it was like, hey, he said all these big names that he wanted to fight, and then he goes and takes on Sergey Lipinets. That's not, you know, what we're counting on when you're saying all these things. If you're saying these things about what you want to achieve and then fall short of that, people are going to call you on your BS, and I think that he has a better feel for that now. I think, you know, now he's really laying himself out there. I want Errol Spence Jr., and let's see what happens. Errol's coming to the fight on Saturday, and, you know, let's see where it goes from here. I mean, to me, it'd be an intriguing showdown, but I think a friend of mine said, you know, it's a lot like Chocolatito Gonzalez. Great talent, but once he started moving up in weight, you know, those punches don't have the same effect, even though they're landing under, you know, they can land at a margin of 2-1. They're not going to have the same effect, and the punches that you're getting hit with will have a you know, a lot harsher effect on yourself.
So. I thought Lipinets didn't expose anything in Mikey, but he took some hard shots from him, and I think he felt those shots. It's almost like how I felt about watching Linares and Lomachenko. Lomachenko clearly won that fight. I mean, Linares was very competitive in it, of course, but you know, Lomachenko won. But he took some big shots, and it looked like he felt those shots during the fight. It made me think, and frankly, it made Lomachenko's team believe that 135 was the max. We're not going any higher than that. I thought that Mikey's team would see the same things, would see a guy that took some heavy punches, you know, handled them pretty well, but took some punches tougher than he's taken punches at lighter weight class, and they would decide that 140 is kind of where we stop, but clearly not. Now, you mentioned the relationship between Mikey and Top Rank, which clearly, whatever word you want to choose, fractured, problematic, whatever it is. One reason I thought that might have a chance at healing is the last few weeks, really the last couple of months, you've seen Robert Garcia at a lot of these Top Rank on ESPN shows. And because he's working with a lot of the guys in the undercard, even some of the main event guys. And at these shows is Bob Arum, is Todd Duboff. I mean, Robert Garcia is the brother of Mikey Garcia, the head trainer of Mikey Garcia. I kind of thought, and I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but I kind of thought maybe that, you know, that might go a little bit of a ways towards healing some of the issues between those two sides. Am I wrong for that?
I always thought that myself. But the thing is that Robert Garcia has a pretty strict policy. I just kind of wrote a story today in Today's Times about this, the brotherly relationship. Robert Garcia lets Mikey Garcia decide what he's going to do in regard to selecting his fights. And when Mikey Garcia was as dug in as he was against Top Rank, Garcia, you know, he had Top Rank fighters at that point too. And he easily could have been a middleman, but he let Mikey Garcia, you know, make his own bed, you know, really. And instead of being a mediator, he has chosen to, like, stay out of the fray. That's, you know, his brother's decision. His brother wants to do this with his career. And as much as we see the potential for him to bring those parties together, it just, up to this point, has not happened. But, you know, the potential still exists. Hopefully that goodwill will mean something, but... You know, I just got off the phone with someone from Top Rank, and they said, oh, you're out there to cover the Muhammad Ali fight this weekend, too, because they view Mikey as someone who just thinks he's, you know, he says all these things that he's the greatest fighter in history, but they dismiss a lot of what he said. They, you know, dismiss him as impulsive and sometimes irrational, and, you know, it's a problematic relationship.
The one thing that could... throw a wrench in any Garcia-Lomachenko fight is if Manny Pacquiao comes out and says, I can make 135 pounds. I wrote about this last week. I talked to Agus Klimas about it. Agus was pretty clear as Lomachenko's manager that he's not going even half a pound above 135. Now, that may just be gamesmanship. If the money's right, sometimes people change their minds. But, you know, first of all, let me ask you, do you think Pacquiao could make 135 pounds and... if he could, what do you make of a Pacquiao Lomachenko matchup?
I don't think he can make 135.
I don't either.
And I think that Agus is, I could be wrong on this, but I think that Agus is just opening the negotiations. Mm. You know, I think that everything you said about Lomachenko Linares is right. Those punches were heavy. But I think that this fight reminds me so much of Pacquiao De La Hoya. And even if Lomachenko is moving up in weight, he's just so much faster. He's going to be able to just pepper a 39-year-old or 38-year-old Manny Pacquiao with these punches mm-hmm. that are going to, you know, break him down. I mean, I don't think Manny can, as good as Manny looked against Matisse, I don't think he can keep up with Matisse's talent. And I think that
Lomachenko's talent.
Yeah, Lomachenko. And I think that Lomachenko sees that, and again, this is an opportunity for Lomachenko. He has said very strongly, I want my next fight to be on pay-per-view. This is a natural. Mm-hmm. I mean, did Manny look good? Yes, but all that does is kind of heighten the interest in what Lomachenko is taking on. If this fight goes down at 140 pounds, I think it's a great fight. It's better than Lomachenko Beltran, excuse me.
Yeah, you know? A lot better than that fight. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Pacquiao has been, I can't really believe what I read about Pacquiao. Like I read, you talked to Pacquiao, so I believe what you read there. But sometimes I see these statements from Pacquiao. I don't even know who they're attributed to. I don't even know who's, if it's Pacquiao saying it, if it's his people supplying the statement to some of these media outlets there. I mean, I read one thing where Pacquiao said, I'm a free agent, or and basically implying that he wasn't under contract with Top Rank. I don't know where Pacquiao stands with Top Rank and what impact that could have on his next fight.
Right. I think he believes he is a free agent, mm-hmm. and I think his people around him, Mike Conn's, believe that he's a free agent. But Bob Arum is counting on the history of their relationship. Arum said he's going to go down there and visit with Pacquiao in the first week of August mm-hmm. and talk to him eye to eye about what he wants to do moving forward. Manny Pacquiao should not fight Terrence Crawford.
No.
So Do not make that move. But I think that...
And Bob's like, Terrence Crawford move up for 140. He's a small... Terrence Crawford has bricks for hands. And Terrence Crawford will put Pacquiao into retirement in a violent, violent way.
Yeah. And I think that would be a very, very sad ending to Manny Pacquiao. Yes. You know, getting picked apart by Lomachenko is not a sad ending. And in fact, it's like a kind of a passing of the torch, like the moment that Pacquiao had with De La Hoya.
Right.
The other option for Manny Pacquiao, when you talk about DAZN, is maybe Amir Khan.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that fight.
If he's a true free agent, I mean, you've got former stable mates going at it, guys who used to work together at Wildcard Boxing Club here in Hollywood. And, you know, the nature of the relationship and putting the fight in the U.K., not in the U.S., where Manny has all these tax problems. We don't know how big they are. You know, we've heard that they're really bad. But taking the fight to the U.K. solves that. And I think that I agree. I think that would be an outstanding fight for boxing and an outstanding fight for DAZN.
And Bob keeps talking about how Pacquiao's tax problems are in the process of getting resolved. I mean, believe that when I see it. Like, I don't know what the number is, but it's clearly significant. And I don't necessarily believe that those tax problems are in the process. And I believe Agus when he tells me that, like, there's no way we're fighting in Malaysia or Australia or something like that. I mean, if there was money in Dubai, I think that Lomachenko would go there to fight Pacquiao, but there's always mythical money that's available in Dubai. And if I'm Top Rank and I'm serious about kind of doing trades and you know, putting guys in other networks, co-promote a fight like that with Eddie. Like, do a fight like that with Eddie Hearn, because that's a fight I think that Pacquiao can win. I think he can go overseas and beat Amir Khan, because Amir Khan is going to go out there and thinking, like, I'm going to be the one that stops Manny Pacquiao. And that's how Amir Khan gets in trouble, isn't it? Like, when he thinks that he's a tough guy and not a boxer.
It's a major fight. And let's be honest, that U.K. boxing audience is
huge.
Is just, yeah.
Sell out Wembley if you do it at some point. Sell out O2. Sell out wherever you want
right.
to go.
So, I mean, I think that's there for the taking. To me, it'd be a very shrewd move on Manny's part to do that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let me move on. We have an official fight for September. Danny Garcia against Sean Porter, a major 147-pound showdown. Kind of a crossroads fight for two guys. The winner of this fight could take a big step forward into other more significant fights. The loser, I think, will take an equally big step back. So when you look at this fight for the two fighters, who is it more important for? Who needs the win more in a fight like this?
I think Sean Porter. I think Sean Porter is on a fast track to being irrelevant with a loss, because let's be honest. I mean, even a fight or two ago, he was like buried on an undercard. So I think that he's got to win this fight. Sean Porter, I mean, let's go back to that fight against Keith Thurman for one of the belts. He was right there. I mean, it was a great fight, decided, I think, by like a point or two on every judge's scorecards. I mean, just an aggressive in your face kind of talent. But I think his erratic nature could, you know, pose some problems for him against the very sharp and disciplined Danny Garcia.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think it's close, because over the last few years, I think a lot of shine has come off Danny Garcia. I mean, we thought of him once back in his HBO days, basically, when he was fighting anyone they put in front of him. He was taking on all the big names. I go back and looking at his resume. You had Morales, even though Morales was kind of shot. Before that, Kendall Holt fought Khan when Khan was at the peak of his young powers. Zab Judah passed his prime too. But, you know, fought Matisse when Matisse was still kind of a fearsome presence out there. Beat him. And then from there on, it kind of declined a little bit. The level of competition, you look at Herrera, a fight that some people thought he lost. Rod Salka, we don't have to get into that one. Paulie Malignaggi towards the end. Robert Guerrero when he was towards the end. You know, then he fights Keith Thurman, he loses. So he's lost the most significant fight of his career since that Matisse fight back in 2013. His resume, Lance, is not peppered anymore with quality fights. So if he loses this fight, he'll have lost two of his last three fights and the two most significant fights he's had in the last 5 years.
The inactivity and those opponents that you just named have clearly been to his detriment. But I think you know Danny Garcia better than I do. And I think that knowing that this is really for him a crossroads fight, even though it's a world title fight, he's not gonna like forever go away if he loses. But I think
he might have to work his way back in kind of opponent level.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be Brandon Rios level fights, Samuel, like undercard maybe level fights. I mean, he's also not a guy that I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but he's not a Adrian Broner's a huge ratings guy. I don't know that Danny Garcia is a huge ratings guy that you automatically bring him back as a major main event headliner.
I think he's smart enough to know what this means, though. And do you feel the same way? Like I said, I think he knows. I yield more to you on this.
Well, no, I mean, look, I knew Danny when, and I wrote about Danny when in SI when he was really at the top, and I really respected the hell out of Danny and Angel for everything they did up until that point. Not just in those years, but early on in his career, he was fighting some older opponents. He was, you know, willing to test himself against the best. But then, you know, in recent years, I remember that quote from Angel. And I'll paraphrase it basically here, where he said something along the lines of, well, they're going to pay you $1 million to fight this guy and $1 million to fight that guy. One guy's really tough, one guy's not. We're going to take the guy that's not quite as tough. Again, it's paraphrasing there. But since then, it's kind of been, he's been sort of a businessman more than a boxer. And that's really hurt his image to some degree. I hope he comes into this fight with that mindset, believing that this is a prove-it type of fight. Because if he doesn't, I think the next year could be a rude awakening for him.
Yeah, but knowing that business matters, I think, is going to be the great motivation that Danny Garcia needs to, you know, get a victory from this fight and then move on to what is before him, which could include Errol Spence or a Keith Thurman rematch.
Major money in it for the winner. You know, whether it's Spence, Thurman, although Thurman, I don't know what the hell he wants. I don't know, he wants like 7 tune-up fights and, you know, free brunch, like to get back into the ring at some point. I love you, Keith. I want to see you back in, man, but you got to actually get back into the ring when you fight. All right, let me finish with the World Boxing Super Series, the Cruiserweight Tournament. Mm-hmm. Alexander Usyk, am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Usyk, yeah. He wins the World Boxing Super Series, beats Gassiev, who I really liked. I mean, I was a big Gassiev fan. Still am. I mean, look, you don't become irrelevant because you lost a tough fight, but he put on a boxing clinic in that World Boxing Super Series final. This was the first final of the Boxing Super Series. The 168-pound final is coming up in the next couple of months. What do you take away first from the first World Boxing Super Series? We saw a tournament in the Showtime Super 6. Disaster might be too strong a word, but didn't have the intended result. What did you think of this one?
I thought it worked. You know, yes, Usyk had an injury along the way that delayed things a little bit, and we were all sort of bracing for that to happen. And it's happened again. It happened in the other one with George Groves.
Sure.
But we got what we wanted out of it, right? I mean, Usyk has unified that cruiserweight division, and he's established himself as really a force who can go out there and fight these other guys now and maybe move up, you know? The biggest thing that was negative, obviously, and I think they're fixing that, is the lack of a U.S. television deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, the exposure that...
Looks like going forward beyond DAZN, right? I mean, the...
Yeah, they are. They are going to be on DAZN.
Yeah.
So the exposure that especially the Cruiserweight tournament deserved, I mean, the fight, I think you referenced it, Gassiev and Dordikos.
Yeah, great
right?
fight.
Unbelievable.
Great fight.
Great
go back
action.
And watch. If you missed that, go back and watch it on YouTube. Oh. That is just... Gassiev throwing bombs, just bombs, and taking some bombs on Dordikos too.
Yeah, and I think that from the standpoint of exposure, they have at least tended to that. Hopefully, moving forward. I mean, this is what I'm all about. I love trying to unify the division, the best guy fighting the best guy in each division, and making it happen. That's what I've always thought that the boxing fans want. You know, we want to know who the best guy in that weight class is. And so from that standpoint, I think that the World Boxing Super Series is doing a good job. And not only that, they're focusing on divisions that can use a little bit more attention. Like I said, the most important thing they can do is just continue to, you know, hammer the airwaves with these fights so we can all learn who these guys are, do the shoulder programming, and highlight these fights, because I think the action, you know, from what I've seen so far is pretty first rate. The George Groves fight in the other division was also very, very strong.
Yeah, most of the fights were really good. I think it's, you know, as they move ahead to the 140-pound tournament, I think it'll be good to have a lot of these fights on U.S. soil. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for a guy like Regis Prograis, who is still something of an unknown amongst casual fans. He's not going to be facing Saucedo. He's not going to be facing Ramirez. He's not going to be facing Hooker. But he is going to get a chance to make a bunch of money. I mean, the money in that is ridiculous. I mean, you get $500,000 just for showing up, then a $500,000 bonus for the first round. The money increases from there on. So he'll get a chance to get paid. And if it's done right with some fights in New Orleans, with fights that are exposed in the U.S. at a reasonable time of day and night on Saturdays, he could really build himself up into a big player at 140 and then go into a fight with whoever comes out of the Hooker, Saucedo, Ramirez sort of troika in the next year or so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you said, I mean, the buzz above among the hardcores over Regis has been sensational. And I think that's going to definitely draw a natural audience to DAZN. And, you know, I think that tournament is going to be very well received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. Let me ask you one last thing about Usyk. About, you know, you win something like this, you want there to be not just the money you made in the tournament, but kind of a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. What's next for him? And I think he did the right thing right after that fight in targeting Tony Ballou. I mean, Tony Ballou is now as hot as he's ever been, coming off the two wins over David Haye. A big name in the UK, represents big dollars. It seems like Ballou's into it. Does an Usyk Ballou fight do anything for you?
Oh, yeah, I think it's great. I think Tony's looked good in coming back against David Haye, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that, again, when you talk about the landscape of where you can put this fight, to put that in the UK, people want to see that there. It's going to have a very exciting atmosphere. And you've got a first-rate talent in Usyk, obviously, just coming off the winning this tournament. And so it's a natural. I mean, that's exactly what the sport should be doing to reward the investment of, you know, the fans who are, you know, tuning in and buying these apps and doing all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yes, natural.
Now, I'm with you. Hopefully that fight takes place in the UK, maybe early next year. I could be in on something like that. Lance, always great to talk to you, man. Thank you so much
for having me, Chris.
All right, my thanks to Lance Pugmire for joining the show. And now, my conversation with lightweight champion Mikey Garcia. All right, joining me this week on the podcast, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the entire world. He won a 140-pound title in his last fight. He's dropping back down 235 pounds to defend his title this Saturday against Robert Easter live on Showtime. He's Mikey Garcia. Mikey, thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right, so tell me first the difference for you in going from 140 to 135. I mean, how is it a significance in terms of weight loss, how you train, all those things?
Well, the training is always the same as far as intensity goes. We always train very hard for every fight, no matter what weight class you're competing at. But the diet does change a little bit, a little more leaner. You have to cut a few more pounds. Those extra 5 pounds, you know, are sometimes a little more of a struggle, a little harder push. I still feel comfortable. I still feel very well at 135. I feel fast and strong, explosive. But you do have to pay attention to the weight just a little bit more.
When guys move up in weight, I've found they often find it a little frustrating going back down because of things they get used to, the ability to eat a little bit more, do things a little bit differently. Has that been a factor in your camp?
I mean, I can see why other fighters might have a harder time adjusting to dropping back to a lighter weight class. It is easier to make 140. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. You know, you don't really struggle at all. You don't really have a weight cut. Mm-hmm. Walk around weight at 140, you know, 45 is comfortable. So just that few extra pounds, you got to watch out. The water intake, the food throughout camp is pretty consistent as far as lean, but the last few days are what you got to watch out for the water, you know, retention and that. But I mean, for me, like I said, I feel comfortable. I'm fine. I feel well at 135. I don't struggle. It's just a little more push that we got to do, but just like anybody else, they're also pushing.
So as we sit here talking on Thursday before your fight, day before the weigh-in, you feel good about making 135, all that?
Yes, we're good. Right now it's just maintaining the weight. Mm-hmm. We've already done all the hard work in the gym. Already have been dieting for the past 8 weeks, 9 weeks of camp that we've had. These last few days, just watch how much water you take. Got to watch out with what kind of food you're eating. You know, I'm not going to have a steak right now. You know, that's too heavy to digest. So, you know, just eat very, very lightly just to get through the day so that we can hit the target tomorrow for the weigh-in and be done with it and be ready to go on Saturday for the fight.
Do you go crazy after a weigh-in? Do you have like a big feast of that steak that you're talking about or a favorite meal that you try to put down?
I'll have the steak for dinner. but it's funny, right after the weigh-in, we don't really eat a whole lot. My body changes and adapts to eating smaller portions. The body changes and your stomach changes and almost shrinks in size. So after the weigh-in, you're really not hungry like you would expect to be. And you get full right away with a small portion. You're already full. So you might order a big meal, a big feast, but you're not going to finish it. What we mainly do is hydrate. You have to hydrate plenty after your weigh-in. That day, tomorrow, I won't be drinking any fluids up until the weigh-in. Just like say, you can't be any ounce over the weight. The limit of 135, so that's very important. So tomorrow, if I'm, at 135 exactly, in the morning, then I won't be drinking any water until after the weigh-in, because you can't be, anything over, or else you're gonna have to go hit, the sauna or do something, and that's really not recommended.
There's nothing worse as someone that tries to get into shape, very low level shape. There's nothing worse than those Friday mornings, going to the gym and being surrounded by fighters, professional athletes, and how good they look compared to how good you look.
Well, we've been training, all our life basically for this. And, it's part of the lifestyle that we have. We put in the work for weeks and weeks, running, the swimming, the sparring, the heavy bag, the mitts, everything. It may seem easy. It may seem discouraging for someone who's new to it or someone barely starting, but it's what we do. It's our lifestyle. It's all we know how to do.
No question. All right, so tell me about your experience going to 140. You step, right into a tough fight. Sergey Lipinets, on a high level, title level. What was that like for you looking back on it?
Well, it was a tough fight. It was a tougher fight than I expected. Even though I knew Lipinets is a tough fighter and durable opponent, I wasn't expecting him to be as heavy-handed. That was a surprise. I expected him to be strong physically, as his, he's a bigger man, naturally bigger, outweighed me on fight night. I expected that, but I didn't expect the power and his punches to be there quite like it did. Even when I dropped him, we exchanged hooks during the seventh round when I dropped him. My hook dropped him, but he landed a hook on my head that still kind of, buzzed me a little bit. As I was walking away and looking at him on the canvas, I thought to myself, wow, he got me with a good punch. Good thing I dropped him, because who knows, another punch that could have dropped me. I definitely felt the difference in size, like I said, so I had to play it a little safer, use my boxing skills, my speed, my footwork, intelligence to overcome that size disadvantage.
It's interesting because, to compare your experience with a guy that you're talked about with in Lomachenko went to 135. And when he finished that fight, even though he won against a good fighter in Linares, his team and even him were all saying, 135, that's it. We realized we can't go any higher. As opposed to you finished the fight at 140, and you didn't really say that. You were kind of looking even at 147. We'll get to some of the guys at 147, but you didn't finish that fight thinking, I got to go back to 140 or that's too, or I got to go back to 135. That's too big for me, right?
No, I still feel comfortable there, even though I know I'm fighting bigger men at 140. And 135 is a better fit for me physically. I have confidence in my abilities, my boxing skills, that I can overcome those challenges as far as weight and size and just use other attributes that I have, other skill sets, to win my fights and compete at those levels, including moving up to 147 in the near future.
You had some options. You could have defended your 140-pound title. Could have defended your 135-pound title. What was the thinking behind going back to 135 to defend this title?
Well, we wanted a big fight. We wanted something exciting, something that can motivate me. And I could be defending my title against top contenders. I could defend my title numerous times. But it wouldn't be as special to me if I'm not fighting a champion or a high-profile, fighter. So when I looked at the options, I looked at Robert Easter, undefeated, world champion at lightweight. I get a chance to unify the division. I get a chance to, unify the titles and win another title in the same division. That just means a lot more to me than just a title defense. And I think the public would also agree. A title defense is fine, and I got no problem with other people, other fighters defending their title. But it just doesn't motivate me enough. And that's why I was moving up to 140 in my last fight to challenge for a world title in the fourth division. Now I'm coming back to lightweight to unify titles. I'm still taking on another champion. You know, I'm fighting champion after champion. That's the stuff that I want to do. That's what motivates me. That's what excites me the most.
If Terrence Crawford was still there at 140 and that was an option for you, would your decision have been different?
I would have gone after him. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always going to try to go after the biggest challenges. And at 140, he was the man. You know, he moved out of the division because he outgrew the division. He dominated the division, took every belt there was, and beat every champion. And there was nothing else for him to prove. Mm-hmm. So now he challenges himself by moving up to welterweight, 147. Mm-hmm. But definitely, he's to me, he's the best, if not the best pound for pound, definitely top. You know, and I have him as the best pound for pound in the world right now.
You and I have had this conversation on Showtime earlier in the year. I'm a huge fan of Mikey Garcia Lomachenko. Like, that's like, if I could pick one fight, that would be the one that I want to see. I know you are willing, ready, willing, and able to take that fight. But, you know, in the last couple of months, you've, you know, talked about 147 and you've talked about Errol Spence. Errol Spence was on the podcast recently. I said, Errol, just leave that Mikey stuff alone. I want Mikey to fight Lomachenko. And Errol goes, tell Mikey to stop saying my name. He keeps saying my name, so I keep having to comment on it. Why is 147 Errol Spence so consistently on your mind?
Because it'll be the fight, I think, that people will see me as the underdog. And when I overcome that and beat him and get that recognition, you know, from the everybody, not just from fans, but the media and everybody included, I think that's the fight that will forever, you know, leave a imprint in my career. I'm trying to get the biggest fight, like I said, the biggest challenge. I'm pretty sure that's the fight that will give me that. You know, it's the biggest threat at the welterweight division. He's the strongest, most threat, you know, the biggest threat, most avoided fighter right now in that division. And that's why I want him. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm very, you know, hopeful that we can land that fight. Like I said, I know I'm going up against a bigger man, bigger, you know, power, bigger weight. Everything's against me, basically. But that's what motivates me and excites me the most.
The punches you took at 140, you just talked about. Lipinets hits harder than you expected. I think you can certainly say that Errol Spence hits harder and is known for having good power at 147. What makes you so confident that you can take that power and win a fight like that?
Well, I have abilities other than just power as well. I got intelligence. I can use my footwork. I can use my speed. I can use my timing, my distance, range. You know, I can calculate different things.
Would you have to kind of reinvent yourself at 147? It's such a physically bigger challenge. Would you have to be a different kind of fighter?
The only thing that I would change probably is the diet. I wouldn't be dieting to cut weight. I'd be on a different type of diet to be physically strong. I am fighting bigger men. Mm-hmm. I'll probably be at a 14, 15-pound disadvantage on fight night. Mm-hmm. You know, so I have to adjust the way I eat so I can be prepared for those big, you know, heavy punches. And but I have full confidence in my boxing abilities that I can compete at that level with a fighter that big, and you know, I just feel very comfortable, you know, in myself, and I really believe in myself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would really, really love to take on that fight.
Your brother, the great Robert Garcia, your trainer, and of course your father, a lot of boxing family, you're a boxing family, and they all say they let you make kind of your own decisions. You are your own man on stuff like this. But do you ask them, you know, what do you guys think? 147, Errol Spence. Do you ask them? And if you do, what do they say?
Well, they don't like the idea at all. My dad, specifically my dad, he tells me that I got no business at 147. Why am I thinking of 147 when I'm a lightweight? Mm-hmm. You know, we did 140, you know, because there was an opportunity to fight for a fourth world title. And we could still fight at 140 if there was a good opponent, a good fight. But my division is lightweight. You know, he feels that I'm a better lightweight right now. But he doesn't quite understand why it is that I want to go to 47. I want to challenge myself. My brother understands as a fighter. He knows what it's like to be a fighter and a world champion. But he also understands the risks of me moving up all the way to welterweight and moving up from lightweight to welterweight. There's a lot of risks, a big risk, not just going up against someone that's a smaller 147 or someone who's been moving up gradually and I'm going up against the top, the most natural 147 there is right now. And the biggest threat there is in that division. So they understand why I shouldn't take it.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother does see as a fighter why I want to challenge myself. And he agrees that that's the fight that I would, you know, always be remembered. You know, I would be remembered for that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take that fight. I really want that. I'm just ready to take on the biggest fight and the biggest challenge, and he's the one.
If you had contracts in front of you for tomorrow saying you could fight Errol Spence or Lomachenko December, January, whatever it is, which would you take? Same money, same?
I take Errol Spence.
Really?
Yeah, my dad disagrees. He also believes that a fight with Lomachenko might actually produce more money. A fight with Lomachenko is probably, I don't know, if maybe I don't want to say easier fight, but less threatening. You know,
you'd go in probably at the very least even fight, even maybe fight, even a favorite.
Maybe even a favorite. As far as power, I don't have to worry about the power. But that won't excite me. I want to challenge myself, and that's why I'll still pick Errol Spence.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people wonder if your history with Top Rank is standing in the way of a Lomachenko fight. Do you see it that way?
It doesn't stand in my eyes. You would have to ask Bob, you know. I know Lomachenko's willing to fight anybody. He's a fighter. He's willing to take on anybody. I know his management would also enjoy that fight. They've actually had some conversation with my brother in occasions.
I see your brother at the ESPN Top Rank shows every week, it seems
He has a lot of fighters with them, and they still have, you know, business with Top Rank.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard Bob Arum really, you know, look for me or look for that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's something that they are holding against me, or maybe they just have other plans for Lomachenko. Maybe they're guiding his career differently. That's his promoter, and maybe his promoter has a different agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm promoting myself. I'm aligned with good people around me. I'm creating good relationships, but I'm allowed to do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to take on a fight with Lomachenko. If it was a real proposal and an offer and we could actually negotiate something, I'm ready to sit down with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I just haven't had that interest from Top Rank.
You said that, if, like I said, when you had two contracts in front of you, you would take Spence because Spence excites you more. Why doesn't Lomachenko excite you on that level? He's considered 1-1A, pound for pound, in boxing. He's obviously the decorated guy, gold medalist, all that stuff. Why doesn't he excite you as much?
Because I see less threat, less danger.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great, talented fighter. He's very fast, does great, you know, inside of the ring, lateral movements, head movements, you know, combinations. You know, just, he does everything so wow. It wows you. But he's a smaller guy. I beat him. Great. I beat, you know, considered by many the number one pound for pound. Great. But there's still going to be a lot of people who will say, well, you were a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to beat him. You know, he's not naturally a lightweight. Although I also started as featherweight.
Mm-hmm.
But naturally, they see me like a bigger man. You know, and that's why it just wouldn't be as meaningful as a fight with Errol Spence. I feel Errol Spence is the one guy where everybody will be very impressed after I fight him and I beat him.
It's hard for guys, and most guys are a little bit older when this goes on, but it's hard for guys to go too far up in weight, then come back down. If you went to 147, would you consider that the end of your lightweight career?
You know, I can't quite say that just yet. I think I would go up to 147, fight Errol Spence. I think I would come back down to at least 140. I don't know about 135. I would really have to change my routine, my diet for quite some time before I can probably think about lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
But if I feel fine at 140 and I feel comfortable, maybe to go down to lightweight, then I wouldn't, you know, rule out the lightweight division. 147 would be the biggest challenge. A second challenge would be coming back down to lightweight after that, because the diet, the body changes, and you know that would be a challenge in itself. So maybe I want to come back down to lightweight and you know, pursue that.
Mm. What's too heavy for you? Because you were talking Miguel Cotto a little while ago, you know, at 150 something.
You know, I wouldn't ever weigh 154. I would have came in 148, 149. You know, he could have came in at 154, mm-hmm. but we're talking about the older Miguel Cotto, you know, a guy who started at lightweight 140, mm-hmm. you know, 47, moved up all the way to 60, and you know, but you know, catch weights, and so he's never been a true middleweight. He's never been a big guy. He was always more of a lightweight, mm-hmm. super lightweight kind of body. Mm-hmm. So I was willing to move up to even 54 with him, mm-hmm. you know, not just against anybody. I mean, some of the other guys there, Charlo, Hurd, you know, Munguia, I ain't even going to mention their name, you know, ever. That's just completely out of the question. Mm-hmm. But a guy like Miguel Cotto, catch him at the end of his career, you know, it made more mm-hmm. sense. You know, you got to look at where they come from, what weight they started, and that's why I was, you know, willing to do something with Miguel Cotto. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mikey, good luck Saturday against Robert Easter. That's going to be live on Showtime. And just know, if you win, I'll be happy if you fight Errol Spence. I'll be at that fight, but I'll be a cheerleader beforehand for Mikey Garcia, Vasily Lomachenko, man.
Thank you. I appreciate
Thanks for joining me, though.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Lance Pugmire and Mikey Garcia for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.